Hi, everybody. I'm Debbie. I'm an addict. And I thank the God I'm understanding for Narcotics Anonymous and for allowing me to be here clean and in recovery and for guiding me and my sisters in recovery here safely. And I thank the committee for asking me to do this workshop. I live in Montgomery County. I got clean in Montgomery County. And so I felt it was my part to, it was only my part to volunteer to participate in the planning of this convention, and I kind of waited to the last minute. But I did show up to a meeting and was able to secretary a workshop and told them that I was available for whatever, you know, they needed me to do. And they said, well, we'll put you on the list for indigent services. And I'm thinking, that's not exactly what I had in mind, but God always gives me what I need, you know, and not what I want. And I'm grateful for that. I was really going, you know, this is my first time sharing at a convention. And I was really nervous a couple of weeks ago. I was going through all the things I was going to say, you know, getting thoughts together in my mind like we all do. And my sponsor told me when you get up there, you're going to forget all of that. So you can go ahead and prep if you want to, but you're not going to remember anything. And, you know, so I called a couple people and said, you know, well, you know, I have this topic and, you know, where do I start? How do I share on it? And they said, Deb, just tell your story. Because we're more alike than different. And as I tap into my story, you know, the longer I stay clean, pretty much any topic relates to my story. And the more I stay clean, the more I'm able to really understand my disease without the drugs, which is the recovery that I'm in right now. And so he said, you know, don't be phony, tell your story. And so I called someone else and a couple days ago, and he said, you know, just tell your story. Don't be arrogant because God can't work through you like that. And so I just need to get that out. The title of this workshop is Attraction or Promotion, but that's the first part of the 11th tradition. And I'm going to tell my story, but I just want to kind of tap into the second part of that tradition, which is equally important. And what it says to me is that we need not promote this thing because, first of all, there's no one who is worthy of speaking for Narcotics Anonymous. No one works a perfect program where we could put them on a billboard and promote them and say, if you do what they do, you'll stay clean, because recovery is different for everybody. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. I started using, let me go back because, again, I've been thinking a lot about my story and going into my fifth step. I've been aware of a lot of things and particularly how much my childhood affects the person that I am today and how that relates to my using and how I started using. I wasn't really able to fully understand that, you know, at first. So I grew up, I was the only girl of four children. I had two older brothers and one younger brother. And I was born in Washington, D.C. And my father got this job in North Carolina as a local sportscaster. So we moved to North Carolina when I was about two. And me and my mom and my brothers, and we lived in a really nice house. And he was like a local celebrity, and my mother didn't work. She was a homemaker, and my brothers were really talented athletes, and we had what I thought was just the perfect life, you know. We would sit there and eat popcorn and watch my dad on TV every night, and he was just the most wonderful man in the world to me. He was my hero, and I guess I was about 10 years old. One Sunday, my mom and my brothers went to my grandmother's house. We went to church, and then we went to her house for dinner. And when we came home, my dad had packed all of his things, and he was gone. And one day, my hero was there, and the next day, he was gone. And I really had no idea how much that devastated me. I saw the devastation that my mother went through, and I saw the devastation that my brothers went through, because he was their little league coach, and you know, he was a real dad. He spent a lot of time with us and took his boys everywhere he went. And I remember all of my mother's brothers and sisters. She has 9 brothers and sisters, and 8 of them had moved one by one from North Carolina, which is where they were from, to D.C. And we were the only ones there because of this great job that my dad had. And I remember sitting on my mother's bed with her, and she was crying, and she was just, you know, saying, what are we going to do? You know, what are we going to do? And at 10 years old, you know, I remember consoling her and telling her, you know, she said, I need to be with my family. And I said, well, let's just, you know, pray and go to bed, and whatever God tells us in the morning, that's what we'll do. And we woke up the next morning, and I ran in her room, and I said, what are we going to do? And she said, we're going to go and move. So right then and there, and I really, really have gotten in touch with that. Like I said, I did my 4th step a few months ago. That was the beginning of the behavior that that haunts me today. That was the beginning of my caretaking, control. I remember how I felt being able to console her and thinking that I helped make a major decision. And from that point on, that's pretty much what I did. I went through what I now know is passive abuse, where a child takes on more responsibility due to the lack of one parent being there than they should and that they're ready for. And I did that, and I grew up like that. Being the only girl, I made sure everybody had what they needed. And I was my mother's best friend and her confidant and her advisor. And I'm dealing with that resentment today of her allowing me to take on all that responsibility. So it's no wonder that I'm a codependent, enabling caretaker. And it's no wonder that I have control issues. But it took me staying clean, going through the process, doing step work to even discover that. And I'm looking forward to that 5th step when my sponsor will help me kind of sort through it all and make sense of it all and move me on into my 6th step. So at 10 years old, we packed everything. My uncle had set us up in a really nice 3-bedroom apartment in the suburbs of Maryland, which is now a drug haven. But at that time, it was really, really nice. And I had my own room, and my brother shared a room. And I remember feeling lonely a lot of times, you know, always wanting a big sister. When I would go to bed at night, I would go in my room, and they would go in their room, and I would hear them in there giggling and wrestling and playing, and I would be in my room by myself, and I really didn't know how lonely I felt, but I did, you know. And so as I've been thinking about this tradition, I realized that it was the power of attraction that led me to smoke my first joint, you know. There was a girl in my neighborhood. I was 13 years old, and, you know, we fit into the neighborhood rather well. You know, my brothers were good athletes, and, you know, I was a cheerleader and in the band and really smart, and so we all fit in. But there was this girl in my neighborhood, and her name was Iris, and we called her Pinky. And Pinky was a couple of years older than me, and I always liked to hang around people that were older than me because of what I took on so young. You know, I was mature, you know, beyond my years. Not mature, I just was grown, but I really wasn't mature enough to make healthy decisions. And there is a difference. And I remember she was older than me, and everybody knew her, everybody liked her. Even though she didn't really deal with a lot of people, you know, she got a lot of respect in the neighborhood. And I kind of wanted to get to know her. And I remember one day, I went to her. I think I was on the playground, which is where all the kids would meet up after school. And she was walking through. And maybe there was something about me that she liked. I don't know. But I just remember going in her apartment with her I never saw her parents. You know, I later found out that it was just her mother, and that her mother worked a lot, and so her and her brother, you know, were alone a lot, which is why she could come and go as she pleased and could hook school and all the things that I thought were cool, you know. And we sat in her bedroom, and it was dark in there, you know, and it wasn't very clean. You know, I couldn't really see, but I remember that it wasn't very clean, and it was dark, and we smoked two joints. She rolled them up, and I smoked them, and I went home, you know, and I went in the kitchen. I made me two sandwiches. I remember that day like it was yesterday. I made me two sandwiches, and I stood in the kitchen, and I was eating one. And my older brother, who was about 17, and he was smoking marijuana at the time, he came in the kitchen, and he looked at me. He said, "Are you high?" And I'm standing there holding two sandwiches, having a laughing fit. I'm like, no, I'm not high. And I'm cracking up. And again, I'm really getting in touch with so many things at that moment. And I wish that he had just kind of choked me up and said, "I better not ever catch you using again. You know, I better not ever catch you high again." But he didn't do that. And I know now that he had the disease, and that, you know, he was powerless to even guide me in the right direction, you know, as a big brother should have. And, you know, I pretty much got high every day after that for about 20 years. Every day, I know I managed to get a joint every day. After a while, you know, I no longer needed pinky. I could roll on my own. I knew where to get it. And I found out that, you know, she really did envy the fact that, you know, my mother would make me come in when it was dark, and that, you know, I had brothers to look out for me, and that I went to school every day and got good grades and, you know, did extracurricular activities. She did none of that. And it's just funny that what I was attracted to turned out to be that she was attracted to me, you know. And our friendship didn't really last. But like I said, I used, you know, and it progressed from marijuana to powder cocaine to crack. That was a deal breaker. That was definitely the deal breaker. And all through my addiction, because I was always able to excel with minimal effort, you know, I was always able to get an A on the test and study the night before, just always able to get over. All through my addiction, you know, I worked, I kept good jobs, you know, I wasn't homeless, and part of it was because I hadn't really hit my bottom, but part of it was also because I had some good enablers in my life. And I'm just grateful that at the end of my using, of course I lied and I stole and I tricked and, you know, I pawned things and everything. Maybe not to the same extent as others, maybe greater than others, but it was important for me when I came in here to really identify in. That is so important. And I was able to do that. But again, it took me staying clean to really understand that it didn't really matter whether I was tricking in the alley or with somebody that I didn't care about anymore. It was all to feed my addiction. It was all centered in using, finding ways and means to get more. So at the end, you know, I was spiritually, I had a lot of my belongings, but I was spiritually, all my spiritual walls had been torn down, you know, and the disease was just doing what it wanted to do with me, you know, coming and going anytime it got ready, and I was defenseless, you know. I was powerless, and I was scared. And so, you know, God intervened, you know, when he knew that I was ready, you know, even if I wasn't sure, you know, he knew. And so I went into treatment, and in treatment, I went to an outside meeting. And, you know, being new, they passed the phone book around for me, and I remember seeing a woman at the meeting. She was tall and she was dark and she was attractive and, you know, she looked like my type. And I remember saying, ooh, you know, I'd like to get to know her. And so I got back to treatment and my counselor told me I need to get a sponsor right now. Even if it's not the one you keep, get one right now. So I, you know, I went back to my room and I flipped through the phone book and there are all these numbers. I'm trying to put faces with names. And I didn't remember who was who, but one person wrote call anytime with an exclamation point. And her name was Tanya. And I called her and it turned out to be the same woman with the boots and the leather jacket and the you know, nice little hairdo and everything. And she agreed to be my sponsor. And 3 years later, she's still my sponsor. And that was kind of, I guess, like the tradition talks about being able, reaching people outside of the fellowship. You know, co-workers who may have a family member that's struggling, or they may be struggling themselves, kind of living in a way that demonstrates that this program works. Of course, we know that promotion wouldn't work because if you're anything like me, I believe what I see more than I believe what I hear. And I really do try to be as close to what I say as possible, which is a daily struggle for me because as that little girl always had to compensate for someone else's whatever it was, I turned into a person that wanted to do everything perfect, look perfect, sound perfect. Everybody in my life needs to be as close to perfect as possible, which is a setup, you know, because that's not possible. And so when you talk about attraction, what we see, you know, I'm sure there's some newcomer or that'll see me and may like the way I look or the way I sound or the way I dress, but when they get to know me, what are they going to find? You know, do I have enough recovery? Am I demonstrating a way of life that'll help them want to stay here and trust in this process until they can get their own foundation and become a power of attraction themselves? And I know for me, the same things, I didn't come in this fellowship impressed or seeking anything material. You know, and I know today that my blessings are nothing I can get for myself. Nothing. Because I had money and cars and clothes and all that when I was using. But when we grow spiritually, and I don't believe that we can stay in this process, and I mean, when I got out of treatment, I got a sponsor, I got in service, I went to a lot of Step in Tradition meetings, I read my literature, and I prayed. And I don't believe I could stay in that process and not have some of my spiritual walls built back up. You know, I think that's what happened, and you lose the desire. You know, your spiritual walls are being built back up, and you lose the desire. You stop, and you lose the desire, and you find a new way to live. And so I know that the people that are in my life, like my sponsor, who I like the way she looked, but as I got to know her, I understand that she has principles. She always puts her principles before her personality. People in my life, there's something about their spirit that draws them to me. And I like to play with words a lot, so I look words up in the dictionary. And I looked up attraction. And not only does it talk about drawing something or someone to you, but it talks about having a certain amount of influence. As a recovering addict, I have a certain amount of influence, I do believe. I have a coworker who, she was clean. We met and when I started working there 2 years ago, and right around Ocean City time, and we just happened to say we were both going to Ocean City at the same time, and I was like, really? You in the same club? And so we found out that we were both, it was the club then. I had a year clean, I think. But she was clean for 7 years, but she wasn't in the room. She didn't go to meetings. She wasn't a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And to make a long story short, we got to know each other. And I really do try to practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I do the best I can, you know. And I really do think that, you know, me working this program on my job, trying to live as spiritual as I can, that it had an influence on her. Today, she has a sponsor. She's at this convention. She shares with me. You know, she asks me questions. You know, she goes to meetings semi-regularly. She wasn't doing any of that. And I'm not saying that I'm responsible for that, but I think we all have a responsibility. When we get this gift, you know, we have to honor it. And we do that by working this program and changing our lives so that if somebody is struggling or somebody knows somebody that's struggling, they can look at me and say, wow, that program does work. And that's what that tradition talks about, that we are successes in our own right, you know, that this program works because we're staying clean. And I don't believe I can stay clean and work these steps without changing the way I live. That hasn't been my experience. So I'm here and I'm in recovery and I'm becoming aware of who I am. You know, I'm seeing this disease, how powerful it is without a drug. But I know that as long as I don't use it, can't win. I know that this program and the God I'm understanding is stronger than the disease. And I try to do the best I can to live in such a way that shows that this program does work. I want to read one thing out of the basic text. Then I'm going to turn it over to Shirley. This just kind of sums up, you know, the tradition for me. It says, our attraction is that we are successes in our own right. As groups, we offer recovery. We have found that the success of our program speaks for itself. This is our promotion. So I try to ask myself, you know, am I living in a way that doesn't just attract people, but am I living in a way that, you know, helps them trust this process, you know, that aids them in the surrender. So that's the question for me, and that's the question for all of you. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Debbie. At this time, we'd like to introduce our second speaker, and that is Shirley.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Shirley, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Shirley.
And I want to thank this convention committee, the program committee, for asking me to do this workshop. And I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful that all of you are here, and I'm grateful we all had a safe trip down the road and hope we all have a safe trip back home. This tradition, Tradition 11, if Tradition 11 was about promotion as opposed to attraction, I and many of my friends would want to be the spokesperson. Okay? We would want to go around and talk about how good this thing is. We would want to be on TV with the makeup artist fixing our face. We would want the wardrobe. We would want to go around and tote this thing because, for real, it's a good thing. And we wish sometimes that we could speak for Narcotics Anonymous. But this tradition tells us that we cannot. Mm-hmm. For when we do that and we relapse, then automatically the public who already is skeptical a lot of times about us says, look, that program doesn't work anyway. And there's a difference between my personal anonymity and how I represent myself as a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And in It Works How and Why, it tells me that I have a right. Narcotics Anonymous gives me choices just by being clean today to break my own personal anonymity. And on my job, I choose to break my personal anonymity, especially if it's to help another suffering addict. And, You know, and in instances just happens sometimes. The other day I had to order a medallion for a friend's anniversary that evening. And being a good addict, I procrastinated to the last minute. So I had to send a courier from my job out to the way out somewhere to pick it up and bring it back. So when I called the courier service was, where are you going? And I told him, and I said, now, you got to kind of like go in this little alley and go up these little steps to get, and he's like, I know where it is. And I'm like, oh, okay. He's like, yeah. He said, do you know where it is? I said, yeah. And he was like, you know, what do you go out there for? And I said, well, what do you go out there for? And so we established a bond. And I said, I probably go out there for the same things you go out there for. And he said, yeah, you know. And that was how I choose to break my anonymity, you know. Even though he didn't know who I was, because the courier that came out was not the gentleman that I talked to on the phone, who was the dispatcher, but still. You know, I was choosing in a subtle way to break my own personal anonymity. And like I say, I choose to do that on my job because when I take off on Fridays and Mondays to go to conventions, I got to have a reason why, okay? And it works. So far, nothing's ever been missing from my job that made them look at me and say, well, 11 years ago, she used to do that thing, you know, and so probably was her. One of the things that I know about Tradition 11 is that this is the tradition that talks about our relationship with the outside public. And this is the tradition that tells us that, like I said, no one person can speak for us. Because it's just no guarantee that any of us will be able to maintain that standard of living that we would project. You know, I would always paint a glorious picture of Narcotics Anonymous, but that doesn't mean I would always live gloriously or do all the right thing. Because first and foremost, I'm an addict. You know, and I never know what lies outside my door and what demons await me. So that is why we do not allow anyone to just speak for us. I have seen instances on the 6 o'clock news where I have seen celebrities do just that. Say something about Narcotics Anonymous or 12-step programs in general, and then they use. And that tarnishes our reputation. And every time it happens, it tarnishes it just a little bit more. Just a little bit more, because people, you know, just keep saying. In my area, in Washington, D.C., there's a lot of treatment centers and a lot of facilities that are closing down because of a lot of insurance companies now don't want to keep sending us back to treatment over and over and over and over again. Because they say, well, if we send you 6 times and you ain't got it, it must don't work, you know. So that's why when we do have high-profile people saying things like that, and people always hear them going, whether it's a country club facility, whether it's a, you know, an at-home DC detox facility, and they keep going back out, then we're not giving the public any hope that this thing really works. And what we always want to do is project an image of that it does work. I was reading when I got here the responsibility statement about how when we are in facilities, especially conventions, because when we are in conventions, we are 9 times out of 10 in a hotel. And when we are in a hotel or a convention center, we cannot run around saying that Narcotics Anonymous works, and then when a big sign says, don't play the piano, at 10 o'clock tonight, we're playing the piano. You know, I have witnessed it. I have been a part of doing things that were contrary to what the fellowship was about. I said one year I came down here, and I was mad at my ex, and it was one of them first years that I had to see him with somebody else, and I threw rocks at him in the parking lot. That is not what Narcotics Anonymous is about. It's about doing your step work so that you get past the throwing the rocks at somebody in the parking lot. But had there been people here, other than just addicts, which there are workers here, there are people that man that information booth, there are people that do a lot of things in here, caterers, you know, that maintain this facility, that saw them and said, well, they're all spending their money to come up here to Ocean City, and they're all doing this, that, and the other, going to meetings, saying they're spiritual, saying they pray, and then look at her outside throwing rocks in the parking lot, you know. And so if that was the case, I certainly have just disqualified myself as a spokesperson for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, Same thing, it says we walk around and we wear NA logo gear and things like that, and then we act up, you know. And that doesn't speak well for our fellowship. Tradition 11 is real simple. You know, we have committees, public information, who go to events, who speak for us, who tell us that we do recover. You know, and that is, like it says, in a group format, not as an individual format. You know, I have many incidences with personal anonymity where I, you know, have not known, because it says, the first thing it says in the traditions when we read it is, well, after we flip it over, it says, understanding these traditions comes slowly over a period of time. And it has taken me time to learn about traditions. And how I learned about traditions was being in service. How I learned about traditions was, and I don't know if you can say traditions get broken or if you can say they get violated, because it's my understanding that traditions are spiritual principles. And if they're spiritual principles, you can't break them. You know, and I don't know that you could even violate them, but I do know that sometimes we go outside the realm of what the tradition is about. And like I say, I've been guilty of it many times, and all of them. You know, all of them. So I know today that I don't speak for Narcotics Anonymous, and even though I don't, I still have to maintain a certain degree of you know, being a looking like I'm doing the right things. You know, but like I said, in Tradition 11, with our relationship with the outside public, we allow H&I workshops. See, my attraction for me was when I was in jail and the people from H&I came, you know, and not one of them spoke for the whole H&I committee. They spoke for, they attracted me by the fact that the women was there, their eyes wasn't all black, they didn't still have a piece of hide broken off in their neck, they smelled good, they had on clothes, and a good friend of mine always says they had on perfume, and I forgot they smelled good. You know, until she said that, and it jarred me back, and I said, that's right, you know. So the first attraction of this program for me was the H&I subcommittee. And I said, now, if them women can do it, maybe I can do it. And then I went to my first meeting, where they did me a great justice, you know, by saying, come in here, welcome, we've been waiting for you. You know, come to the front of the room, sit down, take the cotton out of your ears, put it in your mouth. If we want to know where the cop will call on you. You know, and the attraction in that room was those individuals, you know, and they were not living like I was living. Their life wasn't anywhere near like my life was. So that was attracting to me, you know. Because if I had heard somebody just stand up at a podium or go around just saying that this thing worked, I might not have believed it. Because I'm a very doubting Thomasina. You know, I'm very doubting Thomasina. I don't believe anything until I'm actually in the mix of it myself and I'm doing it, you know. But this is a real simple tradition. The thing about traditions is they seem so intimidating when you're new, because they seem so intimidating to me when I was new, you know. But the longer that I stay around here, the simpler they get. And I said, there's no way that we're going to be able to talk a whole rack of stuff on no tradition, you know. Because they're simple. They're simpler in the basic text than they are in It Works How and Why. Because in It Works How and Why, it gets into our personal anonymity versus, you know, our representation from our public service committees, you know, in group settings and things of that nature. So in the basic text, it simply says that this is the tradition that establishes our relationship with the outside public, you know. And hopefully this weekend, no one will think that they're a representative of Narcotics Anonymous and then go do something crazy, you know, because we always have a way at conventions of doing things crazy, you know, and I know that from experience. But so it is best in Tradition 11, I believe, and I'm going to get ready to open this up so I can get some more feedback from other people, because you always, every time I go to a tradition meeting, I hear something else that I need to hear, something else that I want to hear. And it keeps me just a little bit more abreast of how this fellowship actually works. Because I have thought one way for many years sometimes and heard someone else share and went to their way of thinking, just based on the fact that they had gathered more information. You know, I gather as much information as I can. I want to be an informed member of Narcotics Anonymous. When somebody asks me what is public information, I want to be able to tell them. when somebody asks me what is H&I, I want to be able to tell them. Because, you know, a lot of times we're new, when we're new and when we're old and we forget when we were new and we didn't understand what all these little things was. What's PI, what's H&I, what's this, that, and the other. What is, you know, the phone line and things like that. Because the phone line is a way for attraction, too, because here's addict giving up their time to sit and answer phone and direct you to a meet. You know, our meet list is an attraction. Our meet list is something that I depend on. I depend on. With 11 years clean, I depend on it to keep me balanced, to find out where meetings are. And see, I have to remember sometimes that everybody doesn't have that luxury. You know, everybody doesn't know that if they go somewhere, because sometimes what we do is we'll have a meeting somewhere where it's not really a meeting. And then what happens is the next week when the addict comes back to that meeting and that meeting isn't there, we've done them a disservice because they may not know where to go. See, I know if I go somewhere and somebody forgot the keys and didn't show up, I know where to go. But everybody is not like us, and everybody isn't, you know, as abreast, and everybody hasn't been around, and everybody's not as loud and bodacious and like I am, you know, to just, oh, where's me, Nat, you know, where y'all going, I'm going too, you know, because that's what y'all told me to do when I got here, get to the people that I was attracted to, get in their hip pocket. When they say, you know, they're going somewhere, say I'm going somewhere too. The power of attraction, the therapeutic value of this program, the people that I wanted to be with. And sometimes people say, well, I tried to get with them, but they wouldn't want to get with me. But every time I went to COP, if somebody was out, I did not wait till that person re-upped. I went and I found me somebody else that had some and hoped it was as good as what I wanted. You know, so the power of attraction in here is, and I say this for us that have been around a minute, is that sometimes we'll share and we'll say that we'll help a newcomer. Or we'll say that we're there for you, but are we really? Because I have been guilty of somebody coming up to me and trying to talk to me after the meet, but I was busy talking to my friends because we was going out to eat. You know, so these things just keep us, you know, in touch. We're not perfect. Of course, I'm probably not going to stop doing it totally, but I become more aware of it, you know. And so we do have these committees in place for reason, so that they can handle this business, this big business in Narcotics Anonymous, this big business with the public, you know, the this weekend, that writing that responsibility statement that I hope everybody takes seriously, you know. And I always love it when we're at a convention. They always say, if you have any questions, if you're from the media or the press, go to convention information. Convention information spends a lot of time through the course of the year putting that book together so that they can give out correct and accurate information. Because if somebody come up to me and put a microphone up under my face, I might just start saying anything, you know, just like I do sometimes when I share, you know. Whatever comes to the top of my head, that's what it is, you know. So when we have people that inquire, we send them to where they need to go. Just like we wouldn't try to, you know, if somebody came to us, we wouldn't, like, we know we don't do 12-step calls by ourselves, you know. We go, we get somebody else to go with us, then we turn them over to professionals, you know, because that's what they tell us to do. But I want to thank this committee once again for asking me to share, and I am going to open up the meeting so other people can come up here and give their insight on the 11th tradition. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you. I'm Addie Jamel.
Hey, Jamel.
I was told that I needed to share, even though I really didn't feel like it. And I was told that that was the problem that was going on with me right now, is that I needed to share. And then I walked in here into this meeting, and you were talking about the 11th tradition. And I always feel like when I share that I don't have anything to say about what's going on, even though I have some understanding in that area. I'm very involved in service, and service is what gets us really in touch with traditions. And when we're talking about traditions, we're usually talking about the stuff that's been passed down from generations uncounted to stuff that still holds true today that we hold on to. And in looking at Tradition 11, I was looking at, you know, press, radio, and film, and I was saying, wow, You know, we're talking about relationships, just like the steps will, you know, prevent me from committing suicide, but traditions prevent me from committing homicide. So I'm dealing with relationships with other people. And when I'm looking at relationships, I looked at press, radio, and film, and I said, wow, all my ideas of where my relationships come from, whether they're interpersonal relationships, romantic relationships, or any of that stuff, all that stuff came from press, radio, and film, either some book, Ann Landis or whatever, or some record on the radio that describes some love situation, or some movie that I saw, right? And then when I related that to the 11th step, I was like, well, no longer do I have to let my ideas of what a relationship come from, or what a relationship is, come from press, radio, and film. Now I can let my idea of what a relationship comes from by trying to get my heart in touch with my soul, like we do in the 11th step, you know, with the prayer and the meditation. I was like, wow, man, this is like amazing stuff to me, you know. And then I went on a little further to look at the tradition, and it says attraction instead of promotion, right? Well, after I've done all the stuff that I've done through my active addiction, the lying, the cheating, the disrespecting, the neglecting, and all that kind of stuff, those people, no matter what kind of game I come with, don't want to hear nothing about what's going on or what I say is going on, because the trust has been destroyed. There's no way for me to reach these people with promotion. I could come out and charm the cherries off the tree, but they just don't want to hear it when it comes out my mouth. The only thing that I have left to demonstrate who I am and what I've become with this new recovery is through my attraction. So it's about attraction rather than promotion. For me, and I'm talking about personal. I'm not talking about, you know, just inside the rooms of NA, in the subcommittees, and inside the meeting groups, and inside your group consciences. No, I'm talking about in my own personal experiences, in my own life, the value of the traditions. Early on in recovery, I must have been about maybe 3 months in recovery. No, not quite, 2 months in recovery. Just turned orange or green. And I was at a meeting, right, and I heard this guy sharing, and he was saying how him and his wife and their kids were living with his mom, and he needed to be more like the seventh tradition, self-supporting, declining outside contribution. And it hit me like a bolt of recovery lightning that all throughout my active addiction, nothing was mine. It was somebody else's house I was living in, somebody else's car I was driving, somebody else's food I was eating, somebody else's clothes I was wearing, somebody else's TV, somebody else's cable, somebody else's everything. Nothing was mine. I was living purely off the generosity of others. And when I saw that, I was like, wow, that let me understand that not only did I need the steps, but I also needed the traditions and the spiritual principles that existed within, and I needed to be able to apply them to myself. So when I came into recovery, early in recovery, I had just lost a relationship, one that was very, very important to me because of the fallouts of my using. You know, I used and thought I could lie my way out of it, and I couldn't. And I was like, well, what is a relationship all about? And then I realized that the traditions show me how to have relationships. They give me some guidelines in relationships. And I looked at the first one, and I've seen that our common welfare must come first. Personal recovery depends on NA unity. And I took it a step further and said that when I'm in a relationship, my group welfare must come first, or my life is going to suffer. And it just went on and continued. And the more I kept looking at the traditions, the more I kept seeing that they were not only about the group, but also about my own personal understanding. I went and I said, you know, the third tradition. Of course, we know the second tradition, a loving God is in charge, because I wasn't never running nothing. You know, I ain't nothing but a trusted servant. Someone trusted to, you know, to care for one's heart while they're trusted to care for my heart. I ain't running nothing because God's running the show. But when I got to the third tradition, again, I got another spiritual awakening. And I said that the only requirement for membership is the desire not to use and abuse each other. Not to say that I'm not going to use and abuse, but just the desire not to. And without that desire not to use and abuse others, then there is no relationship. You know? And it just continued and continued, all the 10th tradition. No opinion on outside issues. Every time I shared my opinion with something, I wound up in chaos, controversy, and confusion. Especially when I tried to superimpose my opinions and my beliefs on other people. So when I learned it, all I had to do was just keep my opinions to myself and simply learn the facts, then no longer did I wind up in chaos and confusion. You know, just like the tradition said, you know, no controversy. And, you know, ever since then, man, I've been an advocate of traditions, you know, where some people might say NA Nazi, I'm tradition Nazi, because I see how much they work, not only for keeping the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous together and running smoothly, but also for my own personal life to help me to be able to handle the day-to-day relationships with everyone with whose path I cross. This is really important, especially when we're talking about attraction and promotion for Narcotics Anonymous. Because if I demonstrate the kind of unconditional love, or try to demonstrate the kind of unconditional love that my God shows me with the people that in whose life I touch, then of course, Narcotics Anonymous, well, the convention today, and he told me, Jamel, you really need to share, and that's why you're feeling those overwhelming feelings of sadness that you're feeling, because your cup runneth over and you need to let it out so you can get some new stuff in. I said, okay, I'm gonna do it, even though I really didn't feel like it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing.
Anybody else like to share? We have 20 minutes.
No, we don't.
75 minutes?
We have 15.
4:15.
It's over 4:15. It's 75.
But we don't necessarily have to go by that. So.
Oh, okay.
But anybody else like to share?
Oh, it can go there.
Nobody? Okay, I'm going to thank Debbie and Shirley for speaking again. They were great. We have one more reading just for today.
My name is Gerard, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Gerard.
Just for today. Tell yourself, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living and enjoying life without the use of drugs. Just for today, I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. Just for today, I will have a program. I will try to follow it to the best of my ability. Just for today, through NA, I will try to get a better perspective on my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. My thoughts will be on my new associations, people who are not using and who have found a new way of life. So long as I follow that way, I have nothing to fear. Just for today.
At this time, we'd like to ask for a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God. Grant us serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's so good to hear.